Thank you for joining me this evening on Coast to Coast AM. A cruel and shocking act, the secret history of the Kennedy assassination. We'll open up phone lines at the bottom of the hour. If you have questions for our guest, Philip Sheenan, you can give us a call at that point. Stay tuned after our guest leaves. We'll be joined by author and publisher Chris Milligan and Jim Botello, the former Marine roommate of Lee Harvey Oswald, and we'll explore who was behind the assassination from a very unique perspective. We'll talk about that. This is the third anniversary of the JFK assassination conference that took place. They are fresh from that conference and will be talking to us for the remainder of the show. That's coming up a little bit later. When we return with our guest, we'll be talking with Phil Sheenan about his book and about different discoveries with the Warren Commission and find out more behind who had a stake in the murder of JFK. We've heard from him in the beginning thinking that it was most likely just Lee Harvey Oswald, but who put him up to this? What was withheld from the Warren Commission? What was actually going on behind the scenes, and who were some of the players? Bobby Kennedy, Jackie Kennedy, LBJ, J. Edgar Hoover, Chief Justice Warren. We'll talk about those names and more right here on Coast to Coast AM. Phil Sheenan returns with me for the remainder of this hour as we talk about his book, A Cruel and Shocking Act, The Secret History of the Kennedy Assassination. Phil, before the break, we were talking about the Warren Commission, and I had asked, did you believe that they did discover the whole truth and they were suppressing it, or do you believe things were being suppressed from them in their investigation? And I know we had to cut short your answer, so let's go back to that.
Well, I think it's undeniable that the Warren Commission missed a tremendous amount of evidence. And it's not entirely the Warren Commission's fault, because we now have, for example, the CIA admitting on the record just in the last year that it was engaged in a cover-up, that it hid important information from the Warren Commission, information that might have led the Warren Commission to have a very different sort of investigation that might have uncovered witnesses and evidence that could really rewrite the history of the assassination.
There's Mike, one of the listeners, brings up a point, and he wants to see how you talk about this. He says that the story that you're dealing with is an old story planted by the CIA, that Oswald was working with the Cubans to kill Kennedy, and he went to Mexico City to get paid. That theory, he claims, was destroyed in the 1970s by the House Select Assassinations Committee and a report by Ed Lopez. There's no evidence that Oswald was in Mexico City. So what do you make of something like that when there are different reports going on about what was actually allowable and what has been removed?
Well, I'm not sure how to respond to that other than to say that I think there's a lot of evidence to show that Lee Harvey Oswald was in Mexico City, including many Mexicans who recall having seen him on the streets of Mexico City. There are plenty of conspiracy theories about what happened in Mexico. What I can tell you without any doubt is that the CIA and the FBI and the Warren Commission never got to the bottom of what actually happened in Mexico City. And there are still witnesses available down there, people who dealt with Oswald, people who remembered seeing him, people without much reason to lie, who still have stories to tell. And it's a shame that nobody's gone down there from the United States government to try to get them to explain what they saw 50 years ago.
All right. You know, a lot is said, too, about Oswald. We spoke with Judith Very Baker on the show about a year ago discussing her involvement with cancer research and the possibility of using cancer to assassinate Castro and Oswald's involvement in that program as well, and that Oswald was actually a fan of JFK, and he had gotten wind of the work that was going on and that there was an assassination attempt, that when he stepped in to try to alert people to that is when he became aware that that put him in the crosshairs. That's coming from people that were on site at the time as well that have a stake in the game. And I mean, there's a lot of evidence that seems to point towards Oswald not being involved in trying to bring down the president or being on that angle of it as well. How do you address that topic?
Well, I can certainly understand the confusion. I mean, what was said at the time was that Lee Harvey Oswald in many ways appeared to be a fan of John Kennedy's, a champion of John Kennedy's. I think at the same time there's just as much evidence to show that Lee Harvey Oswald was a very delusional, troubled young man, and that he somehow became convinced that the Kennedy administration was going to bring down a man who was his real champion, and that was Fidel Castro, and that Kennedy, for some reason, therefore needed to be stopped. I will say at the end of all this, this points again to the essential problem, which is there's lots of witnesses, there's lots of evidence that should have been gathered 50 years ago that would have answered a lot of these questions, but because it was never gathered, we deal with these conspiracy theories, and I think these conspiracy theories are going to linger forever.
Well, isn't there proof that it was a conspiracy when you know that people were suppressing information and allowing the truth to be told? Isn't that in effect a conspiracy this case as well?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of evidence to show that there was a conspiracy to cover up the full truth about the assassination. And I think it's a remarkable thing, and I'm surprised there's not more attention being paid to it. You have the Central Intelligence Agency acknowledging on the record that it was engaged in a cover up.
What do you, right, and they do seem to be passing on that. I thought there would be more play on that today with the anniversary, and I really didn't see much more on that except for a couple of glossing comments and statements. Maybe I just missed that documentary or that writing, but there didn't seem to be anything regarding that. Why do you think that is still being downplayed? I mean, the CIA came out and made this statement. It seems like there's no reason to hide that anymore.
I was surprised. I think I will give this to the conspiracy theory community. I think they are very critical of what we now call the mainstream media, the major newspapers, the major television networks, and I think there's good reason for a lot of that criticism. I think a lot of the major newspapers in this country, and I worked for one of them for more than 20 years, they just don't want to hear much more about the Kennedy assassination. It's a terribly controversial, terribly confusing subject, so they just don't address it as they should.
That seems ridiculous. They just don't. It would be news if they made that news, because as you pointed out at the beginning of the show, people are still fascinated. It's one of the great American mysteries of our time.
Yeah, so, and it's this is the assassination of a president we're talking about here, and it seems to me that the major national news organizations have a responsibility to continue to cover that story until there is a final resolution. But unfortunately, I really do think that major news organizations, most of them, have abdicated that responsibility. They decided years ago that the Kennedy assassination was such a morass that they weren't going to devote much energy to covering it much further into the future. And I think that's a shame. I'm pleased to some extent to try to fill that gap when I have the opportunity. But, I'm one reporter among many thousands in Washington who might otherwise be covering this story.
When you look at all of the loose threads that are out there, and I understand, again, you mentioned earlier why there would be so many different conspiracy theories because of the people involved, but isn't it a little strange that the Warren Commission included Alan Dulles, the former head of the CIA who was fired by JFK?
I think it was a terrible mistake, and I'm surprised more people didn't focus on it at the time. But yes, I think that was a terrible mistake to put Alan Dulles on the investigation, that of course the people who made the decision to put him on the investigation didn't really know the full universe of facts about what Alan Dulles had been up to at the CIA. You know, what we now know is that Alan Dulles was involved in all sorts of activities that were at very, that were questionable, if not illegal, including the assassination of foreign leaders, including efforts to kill Fidel Castro. And if all of the activities of the CIA had been known to the Warren Commission, at least those activities that might somehow, even tangentially, be linked to the Kennedy assassination, they would have raised a host of questions that should have been investigated in 1964.
Talk to me about John McCloy, please.
John McCloy was a very prominent banker, diplomat, a friend to presidents, who'd been important in Washington for many, many years. And he was appointed to the Warren Commission, apparently at the recommendation of Robert Kennedy. And we should point out that Robert Kennedy, there's a paper trail suggesting that Robert Kennedy was also responsible for getting Alan Dulles put on the Warren Commission. There's debate about this. There are people who say that Robert Kennedy would never have done such a thing, but I think there's reason to believe that Robert Kennedy put both of those men onto the Warren Commission.
But John McCloy, as you said, he was a banker. What would a banker have in reviewing a murder case on behalf of the public? I don't understand the attachment of this person. I understand that you're saying that RFK put him in there, but for what benefit?
He's much more than a banker. He was a man who really was put in place by the U.S. government to run Germany after World War II. He was a man of long diplomatic, economic, foreign policy experience. And, you know, the effort was made to put together a group of men with wide experience to make the decisions about how the investigation into the assassination should be led. I don't think it's terribly surprising that a man of McCloy's stature would have been put on the Warren Commission.
All right, you also had the Warren Commission that included Gerald Ford. Now, he's the only president who was never elected as vice president or as president. Kind of an interesting coincidence, as a listener brings up. And it's also been revealed in the public record that Ford was secretly reporting activities of the committee to J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah, I think that was shocking, and that's absolutely demonstrated from the record, is that Gerald Ford, who was sort of an up-and-coming Republican congressman in 1964, apparently, shortly after the Warren Commission was formed and after he was named to the Warren Commission, calls in one of J. Edgar Hoover's top deputies and tells him that he, Ford, wants to be an FBI informant on the Warren Commission, that he will fill in the FBI secretly about what is going on with the Warren Commission. It's kind of remarkable that he would have this secret deal with J. Edgar Hoover.
Now, James Files, who's a federal prisoner, he's come forward saying that he was the shooter in the grassy knoll. Have you done any vetting into that storyline? And is there anything that we can say and look at definitively to prove he was not there and had no part of this case?
I'm only slightly aware of his story. You know, there are many people who have come forward over the years to say that they had some role in the Kennedy assassination. I think the vast majority of these people have later been shown to be totally discredited.
Well, right. It would seem easy enough, right, to prove or disprove if somebody was in that area at that time.
Absolutely.
And would they have had access to the gun?
Right. And, I'll tell you, and I have had this experience personally, which is that it is surprising and kind of alarming to discover how many people are determined to claim that they had some role in this turning point in American history, even if it's very clear from the record they had no role whatsoever.
Well, we see that in regular everyday crime. People love to involve themselves in a story and will cop to murder, kidnapping, and other crimes just to get attention, which is really a bizarre fact. What is the importance of the memo by J. Edgar Hoover, which names George Bush in Dallas in 1963?
You know, I have not focused on that. I don't know if that has been proven to even be a legitimate document.
What about the document is so, you know, interesting? Why did that even come up, do you know?
You know, I've read about that document. I've never seen it. I've never seen any indication that it's a valid document. You know, there have been so many purported top secret memos and reports and documents that have somehow appeared on the public record. They appear on the internet all the time that seem to have been dummied up. Again, this seems to be some effort by people to claim they have documents that would prove they have some personal role in the assassination drama, when in fact they have no role.
All right, and then you've got things like the Zapruder film, which is, I think, easily one of the most viewed films in history, right? I mean,
the most viewed film in the history of motion pictures.
Right, and analyzed from every angle. And, you know, a lot of the experts believe it clearly shows that the kill shot came from the front right, which blew his brains out of the back left of his head and onto the back of the limousine, where you can see Jackie trying to collect the pieces. And as a matter of fact, people across the street were struck with pieces of the brain. How do we address that, you know, that action would blow it out back instead of forward?
And, well, I personally found that enormously confusing when I first saw the film in the 1970s. You know, the film seems to show President Kennedy's head snapping back after being hit by the shot. And that's confusing because you see that and you think, aha, the Warren Commission must be wrong. There must have been something fired from in front of the motorcade, from in front of the limousine. And it turns out that the Warren Commission investigators did address that, and it's kind of a grisly thing to talk about, but apparently, you know, human bodies react in what seem to be unpredictable ways after a rifle shot. You know, after a bullet hits a human body, you know, fluids move, body masses move, and it's not so surprising to actually have sort of the laws of physics seem to be defied by seeing his head snap back when, in fact, the shot came from behind, not from the front.
All right. You know, we glossed over LBJ's importance in this role. And again, the fact that a few days after the assassination, he was due to answer in court for some pretty devastating news and things that probably would have ruined his life. This assassination came in and this man moved into a position of power and that case vanished. How did that just go away? And how do we not look at the fact that, you know, this, that LBJ certainly would have had a very important role in this death because of being able to get rid of the problems that were coming, you know, on his doorstep.
Oh, well, you know, I think he was a very logical suspect in the investigation. In fact, one of the young investigators on the Warren Commission staff was absolutely determined to question LBJ directly. Because he thought LBJ was such an obvious suspect, somebody who really had something to gain from the assassination since he became president of the United States. And as you say, this brewing political scandal mostly disappeared.
Which is funny because, again, that was something that I didn't even know about until just a few years ago. But it was big news at that time. I mean, it was something that was, it could be, you know, potentially very upsetting to the country and certainly to LBJ. And I know Roger Stone, the author of The Man Who Killed Kennedy, the case against LBJ, plots a pretty interesting, you know, map there for LBJ's involvement in this case.
Well, you see, this is something that people have been arguing. I don't think at the end of the day, there's any concrete evidence to support it. And one thing you have to keep in mind about all this is that LBJ was in the motorcade. You know, he was two cars behind Kennedy. And, you know, a stray shot from the shooter might have hit him or Lady Bird Johnson, who was also in the limousine. It's a little hard to imagine him authorizing an assassination in which he could easily be himself, you know, injured or killed.
Well, right, but LBJ didn't hide his disdain. He was not a fan of Kennedy's and was overheard by...
I don't know if that's entirely... He's clearly not a fan of Robert Kennedy's. Those two were bitter enemies. I don't think there was the same sort of bitterness directed by LBJ to President Kennedy. But LBJ himself was very much aware of these rumors that he was somehow involved in the assassination. And that's one more reason, apparently, that he decided on the creation of an independent commission that would be led ultimately by Chief Justice Warren. He felt there needed to be some sort of independent investigation that would clear LBJ of involvement in the murder.
When we come back from the break, you had alluded to last hour some of the evidence that's going to be released. When is it, 2017?
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about that and its potential impact. We'll also open up phone lines if you have questions for our guest as we round out this last half hour with our guest, Phil Sheenan. A cruel and shocking act, the secret history of the Kennedy assassination. We have a link to our guest, his book, and more information. Go check out coasttocoastam.com. Again, that's coasttocoastam.com. Tonight's show topic will give you all of the pertinent information about that. And while you're there, check out Become a Coast Insider. For a year subscription, breaks down to just 15 cents a day. You get more in-depth research on the topics that we cover every night on the show. You also get aspects of one-on-one conversations with George Norrie and other guests like Linda Moulton Howe tomorrow night as a Coast Insider, part of the live chat. So go check that out at coasttocoastam.com. Keyword Insider. We'll be back with more right here on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you all for being here this evening. A Cruel and Shocking Act, The Secret History of the Kennedy Assassination. Phil Sheenan, our guest. Phil, talk to me about what's coming up in 2017. A lot of people aren't even really aware of this, but there is evidence and information that will be released. Why that year?
It was a year set by a congressional law. It's remarkable that there are still documents that the government considers secret that somehow relate to the Kennedy assassination. You have to wonder what could still be secret all these years later. But there are more than 1,000 documents that under the law will be made public in 2017 unless the President of the United States declares that they cannot be released.
Right, which is what a lot of people are speculating will most likely happen in 2017. Hasn't this been promised to us in the past before and then stopped?
Well, there have been over the years, over these 50 years, there have been repeated efforts to release and then to back away from promises to release documents involving the Kennedy assassination. At this point, millions and millions of documents have been made public, and a lot of them were very valuable to me in organizing my book. But apparently there are still something more than 1,000 documents that will be made public as it stands now in 2017 that will apparently shed some new light on the assassination.
Before we get into taking phone calls and questions regarding the case, what do you want people to get from this book? What do you feel that you walked away with that's different than what people have seen time and time again?
Well, I think my book offers a lot of new information to suggest just how much information has been denied to all of us for all these 50 years about the assassination, and how much of that information might still be available to us in the form of witnesses who are still alive, who still might have an awful lot to say about the assassination, about Lee Harvey Oswald, and about the circumstances that led to the president's death.
All right, let's take our break. When we return, we'll take your calls here on Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. We have open phone lines right now. Let's go to Wild Card Line 1. Bill, West Hartford, Connecticut. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Hi, Dave. Hi. I have a great point leading to a question for your guest. I have in front of me a book I just finished reading today, this afternoon, Jesse Ventura's book, They Killed Our President, 63 Reasons to Believe There Was a Conspiracy to Assassinate JFK. And the crux of the evidence is on this very short paragraph I'm going to read that's about the presidential limousine, which was the most crucial crime scene evidence. Quote, make no mistake about it, the open Lincoln limousine was the crime scene of the assassination of President Kennedy. So let's take a look at how they preserved that crucial crime scene. Did they wrap police tape around it so that everybody saw police crime scene, do not enter, and nobody touched the thing? Did they make any serious effort to maintain the integrity of that crime scene? No. They didn't do any of those things that they clearly should have. What did they do? JFK's limo was quickly shipped off to Detroit for a rapid makeover. That's right. President Lyndon Johnson and company had the crime scene immediately shipped away. I'm almost through. Isn't that great? Does that tell you something about the authenticity of the government's actual efforts to determine who killed our president? Maybe I should add, or lack thereof. Would you comment?
Well, I certainly think this is not the only example of evidence being poorly handled after the assassination. I was sort of startled to discover after the assassination, the clothes of Governor Connally, John Connally, who was in the limousine with President Kennedy, were not only taken custody of by the state of Texas, but they were apparently dry cleaned, which made them absolutely useless as evidence after the assassination. You know, the police in Dallas made a tremendous number of errors involving the...
But this was Johnson. President Johnson did the limousine thing. President Johnson ordered the limousine sent to Detroit, he himself.
Perhaps Governor Ventura knows something I don't know. I didn't realize that President Johnson had done that in particular.
Yes, he did.
All right. Thank you, Bill. We appreciate that aspect. Let's go to Wild Card Line 2. We have Will from the Bronx. Will, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Dave?
Doing well. Okay. Thanks for listening this evening.
All right. You know, I was 8 years old when this went down, and as a little kid, I could see that this was a conspiracy even at that age. You know, I saw that there was a lot of fear, not only in the commentators trying to maintain accuracy, but there was this fear that there was this thing operating within our government. And everybody's words were very measured. But here's the real deal. Today, I saw a film on Channel 129, and I got to see footage I didn't see with Oswald. He was not the slurring speech guy that had this machine. He was a very clear guy. He seemed to be very clear with his speech, and he seemed to be wise beyond 25 years, and he seemed to have realized that he was caught and that he was the pawn in a bigger machine. And he asked for his lawyer in New York, a guy by the name of Apt, and he was waiting on his day in court. I could see that now as an adult. He was waiting on his day in court. They had to put the wraps on him. And the fact that Ruby walked into a security place where he got a guy just killed the president, and he was able to walk right up to this guy with a gun. He was allowed up there with a gun to shoot this guy. And then Robert Kennedy right after that. Come on, man. I mean, you know, after 50 years, you know, they really need to stop treating us like fools, man. Y'all have a good evening.
Thank you, Will.
Well, I think the caller makes a couple of excellent points. That, and in fact, Lee Harvey Oswald was actually quite an intelligent, articulate young man. And there are radio interviews with him in which he seems very poised and very well educated. You know, that he's not this he's not the crazy man so often portrayed by people who are involved in establishing the official story. And I think he also makes an excellent point as to why there are so many conspiracy theories that people just found it impossible to believe that, you know, in the case of Ruby, that 48 hours after President Kennedy was killed, that his assassin was killed on national television. That just didn't make any sense. And it led people to assume there must be some larger, awful story about what was going on.
You know, another listener emails in and says, Dave, the question I have is that they have showed Kennedy laying on the coroner's table with a big section of the back of the right of his head missing. Anyone that knows about ballistics knows it's small entry wound and large exit wound. That means the bullet that took out the back of his head came from the front, not the back where Oswald reportedly was.
Well,
now that photo is out there. I mean, it's, you know, I'm looking at a copy of it right now and looking at the original drawing on it as well. And it does seem to indicate, I mean, it's, you know, it does seem to indicate small wound in, big wound out.
Well, all I can tell you is that, you know, I'm not a forensic pathologist. I don't have any specialty in ballistics. I will tell you, though, that the nation's finest forensic pathologists, the people who do this for a living, have reviewed that evidence time and again, and they have supported the Warren Commission on that particular point, that the shot came from behind.
All right, let's go to east of the Rockies, Donald in Missouri. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, thank you for calling in this evening, Donald. What did you want to talk about?
Well, I think people are focusing too much on, instead of asking who shot Kennedy, but why he was shot. Truth be told, his driver shot him, turned around, put a bullet right in his head. But if you want to know why he was shot, you have to follow the trail of power. Just like President Eisenhower, Kennedy gave public speeches talking about the military-industrial complex, which we know is basically the central banks that are all run mainly by political Zionists. And Kennedy was going to issue a debt-free national currency that would undermine the Federal Reserve banking system and would get the United States out from under the thumb of that banking cabal. So basically that was one reason why he needed to be killed. And, you know, they say kill two birds with one stone, but, I mean, Kennedy was the money ball. Because they killed him, they got the LBJ case to disappear, the Marilyn Monroe scandal that was making the U.S. president look weak, that, you know, obviously goes away once, you know, he and she are both dead. The Cuban Missile Crisis that happened the year before, JFK, he was actually at odds with the military commanders his own military commanders, the U.S. commanders.
Can I stop the color? Sir, this is really all nonsense. You know, I'm happy to listen to a lot of the people who call in to offer legitimate conspiracy theories, but if you truly believe that one of the Secret Service agents in front of President Kennedy killed him, I think that for me ends this conversation.
All right, Donald. Well, I know that there was a lot of speculation about that. There was video that was analyzed and looked at, and there was some strange movement from the driver that came out, I think, a year or two ago. Did you see any of that when it was being...
There have been allegations that a Secret Service... I mean, I don't think there's any evidence to support any of it, but there are allegations that a Secret Service agent in the motorcade, that a bullet from one from his gun actually hit the president. Again, there's no evidence that I know of to support that, but the idea that one of the people in the same limousine turned his gun from the front to kill President Kennedy, there's no evidence to support that. And that gives you a sense of some of the nonsense that we have to deal with.
Well, and looking at the evidence, I mean, people see what they want to see in this case. Yourself, you know, many of the different researchers, the caller that called in. And again, when you see evidence that appears real and has somebody else's angle and story put on it, it's part of why I think this is such an intriguing aspect, because you can look at so many different aspects of this case and examine them. And if you have your own theory, you can start to substantiate and build a pretty good theory on so many weird angles of the story altogether.
And I'm saying that's true for most of the people you're hearing from. I'm saying I grant you that there's reason to there's reason to believe that there may have been some sort of conspiracy element to all this, and that people have very legitimate reasons to believing there might have been a conspiracy. But I say what the caller just offered, though, there's nothing to back up any of that, and the anti-Semitic element to it is particularly offensive.
All right, and again, with the video that he's referring to, if you Google it, you'll find that there's video out there for the listeners that shows a strange motion from the driver that, again, if you're going into it with the conviction and belief that the shot came from within the car and from the front, you see a strange motion. I've watched the video repeatedly myself, and I don't see what they are seeing. But as you said, it's intriguing how people will cling to a certain aspect of this, and sometimes that's all that they see.
And often I find that understandable that they cling to that element.
Right.
But there are people out there who are operating on the basis of no facts.
West of the Rockies, Robert in Dana Point, California. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my day. Just a quick question and a statement for your guest tonight. One, I was curious to know his knowledge about the Garrison case, 1969, specifically that involves Clay Shaw. I knew a gentleman, I won't say his full name, just to protect his existing family, although he's not alive anymore. He was a writer for the Los Angeles Times and actually spoke to Jim Garrison on a daily basis by writing about his activities in the case in Los Angeles. Then Jim Garrison would contact and confided him information about that. Curiously, I know what to know what your guest thinks about Clay Shaw, his statements that he supposedly did not work for the CIA, that he had no involvement with the CIA, and then later recants. We even have a director later, a couple years later, that admits that Clay Shaw did have ties and have a very high clearance with the CIA. The gentleman that I'm speaking of that wrote for the Times was writing about this unilaterally and then at times specifically with Jim Garrison, who, you know, confided information, said this is the entire case of what Jim Garrison was working for, that this man lied under oath. He later admitted that he did work for the CIA, and then we even have a director, as I mentioned several years later, that says, yes, Clay Shaw did have a very high clearance and was a contractor for the CIA. Also, the other statement I just wanted to throw out real quick was the previous caller, a gentleman that was talking about these other conspiracies that had no validation. There is one instance in 1962 where President Kennedy put a halt on Treasury printed bills. And if you pick up any bill, whether it's a 5 or a 10 or a 20, you'll see very many in circulation right now, if you're lucky to find it, that have a red seal as opposed to a green. That's because President Kennedy's six-month plan to audit the Federal Reserve and the IRS was implemented, and during this time there's no Federal Reserve notes. You'll see it says U.S. note as opposed to Federal Reserve. So to say that some of these claims are unfounded when it comes to money is completely untrue. Anyways, I'll take the gentleman's response off air. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Robert, thank you for listening. What are your thoughts on the Clay Shaw aspect of the story?
Well, the district attorney of New Orleans, and New Orleans was Lee Harvey Oswald's hometown and where he lived for part of 1963, came forward after the Kennedy assassination and claimed that he had solved the Kennedy assassination, that there had been a conspiracy led by this local businessman by the name of Clay Shaw, and that Clay Shaw had some sort of affiliation with the CIA and that the CIA was involved in the assassination. Now, I've got to give this to Garrison, that, you know, he was onto something in the sense that it was very clear to him, and I think it's very clear to us now, that the CIA did withhold a tremendous amount of information that might have rewritten the history of the Kennedy assassination. But Garrison, unfortunately, was involved in all sorts of inappropriate and illegal tactics in building his investigation. And I certainly think the evidence shows that he framed an innocent man, that Clay Shaw was targeted by Garrison largely because Clay Shaw was gay, and Garrison wanted to suggest that somehow the Kennedy assassination was the result of an effort of a conspiracy by a gay cabal in New Orleans. It really all got out of hand, and I say, unfortunately, I think we now know that the Garrison investigation was really built on a tremendous amount of false evidence.
Who is responsible for suppressing or sequestering the remaining documents about the JFK assassination until 2017?
At this point, it's in the control of the National Archives. The National Archives has kept this information secret, apparently largely at the request of the CIA. This is my guess, but it sure looks like the CIA is interested in protecting the identities of people who are still alive and who were working for the CIA undercover in 1963, the idea being that somehow these people's safety might be in jeopardy if it were known today that they had worked for the CIA 50 years ago.
Does that seem like a serious red flag to you? 50-some years? I can understand maybe even if you went 30 years to protect the, you know, the anonymity of those agents. But we're at 53-plus years here. How can it possibly be any kind of problem for our...
I totally agree with you. I just cannot see at this point what should remain secret. And, you know, it's the government itself that's creating the conspiracy theories. You know, by keeping information secret at this point, the government, the CIA in particular, is leading us to believe that there is still something being hidden about the Kennedy assassination. You know, so much of the what we now know as the conspiracy theories about the Kennedy assassinations are built on the missteps and the misdeeds and the inappropriate efforts at secrecy by our own government.
All right, Phil Sheenan, our guest this evening, A Cruel and Shocking Act, The Secret History of the Kennedy Assassination. It's the winner of the Francis Parkman Prize. The book is out and available, New York Times bestseller. You can pick it up, review it for yourself, get more in-depth in the book. There's photographs, there's documentation. See for yourself what he found in the research that he did. Does this make sense with what we've been told from so many different aspects of the investigations? How can there be so many different angles to one story? How can there be so many different people that are sure that they have the answers? Well, you can pick up the book for yourself, read it, and see if our guest, in fact, pulled together the information that backs and supports his book. It's a fascinating read. There's some interesting points here I think that you'll enjoy. So pick up the copy of the book. We've got more information on our website. Go to coasttocoastam.com. You'll find links to our guest, links to the book, and more information. Thank you to Phil Sheenan for joining us. When we return, we'll continue on our 13th annual Kennedy Assassination Show, and we'll be joined by publisher Chris Milligan and Jim Botello, the former Marine roommate of Lee Harvey Oswald, and we'll explore what they believe was behind the assassination of JFK. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM.